This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 27th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Dave Dickey, of course, will be along with all the day's agricultural news. And then we'll hear a discussion I had this morning with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. He's the senior senator from Illinois. I asked him about the defeat of the Ron Kind Farm Bill Amendment in the House of Representatives last night and his new proposal for that piece of legislation in the Senate. It all comes up on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Taking a look now at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade as they settled on this Friday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit for the soft red, 653 and a quarter, up two and a quarter today. December futures at $6.69 were unchanged on the afternoon. September corn futures, 321, up three and a quarter. December futures at 336 and a half were up three and a half on the afternoon. March contract, 351 and three quarters, up three quarters, and December, or rather three and one quarter. And December futures were up two and three quarters at $3.86.5. August soybean futures, 8.15.5, down six. September's were down six as well. They settled 8.23.75. And November beans at 8.40.5 were down six for the day. November bean futures at 8.86 were down 5.5 for next year. Bean meal futures, August contract, 2.13.60, down 4.10. August bean oil at 36.76. Up 17 for the day. August live cattle at the Mercantile Exchange, 93.62.5, $1.60 higher. October futures at 98.65 were up 145. August feeder cattle, 77.5 cents higher at 117.12.5, and September futures at 117.77.5 were up 72.5 cents on the day. August lean hogs now finished the day at 72.77.5. They were down 37.5 cents. From the outside markets, nearby crude oil trading the September contract at $76.95 a barrel. They're up $1.99 for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down just 46 points at this hour at 13,428 after a really rough day yesterday afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon there, Todd.
Let's talk about the trade in the week, and I want you to go where I suspect you'd like to talk about is all the big happenings in the wheat market. 11-year contract highs made yesterday.
Yeah, the wheat-corn spread continues to support the overall mindset, and it's interesting because we've had a lot of global talk about wheat, and you know we've hit that quite a few times the last few weeks, and it was interesting because the closing corn commentary coming out of one of the news wires from the floor was that corn rallied on the close on ideas that there are global weather worries, and they're talking mainly about southeastern Europe, you know, where the same areas that we've had problems getting either wheat out of the fields or getting a rain on the wheat, depending on which part of the Europe you're talking about. Those are still probably the main coarse grain and maize areas as well. So you've got some big issues now starting to crop up because they're in the same type of crop year time period that we are as far as grain fill for their maize. So that's been the biggie. And, you know, certainly the spring wheat probably took some of the luster off the market today. The crop tour that we saw on the news wires this morning talked about a little bit more than maybe five bushels higher in the northern areas for spring wheat country for the United States. That was higher than last year, and that probably took some thrust out of the upside market, as did the new contract high posted yesterday in the quick sell-off. But We did end the week above the old contract high of 650. That sets us up for a pretty decent week, technically speaking, next week.
And is there really much upside potential, do you think, in the wheat market? Have we gone to contract highs and now we're good for a while, or we'll do some consolidation, drop back? What's the process?
Two big things there. The USDA has made it known that they will revise their winter wheat acreage estimates in August because of the flooding in Southern Plains. So it brings us back to that 1993 mindset all over again that we've been hitting a lot lately. If they lower that substantially in August and take our ending stocks down, and then they reduce some of these European and Australian crops that maybe they just had increased this past month in the July report, they went up to about 116 million metric tons for ending stocks, Todd. And I guess to answer your question is that they would probably need to go back below 100 or get down to about 112, 110 million metric tons for ending stocks in the August report. However they want to do it, that's the number that we're focusing on. If they would get back down below 112 and be right back to where we were back in June, then I think, yeah, there is more upside potential in the wheat market, especially if the dollar kind of flattens out. That's probably the other big indicator that we're going to have to watch the next 2 weeks, and that'll all play together, the dollar trend going into the August report, and then how USDA gives us the August numbers for the world wheat crop.
If this is the case, it should really yank on the corn to the upside.
We would think that, and then there's going to be a lagging effect. There's no question about that, because we did see the wheat have a little bit of difficulty rallying up until harvest, and that made sense, but the wheat sure did rally nicely going into harvest. That has yet to be seen for the United States corn crop, but certainly the European corn crop and even the Chinese corn crop's getting a little bit more attention. Those areas in South America, if they all come to pass where they're not really running on all eights, just like the world wheat scenario was going into our harvest, then, yeah, you could probably play the same type of environment out.
Yeah, so at that point we have wheat rallying for acres in the United States and around the globe, corn rallying against it to continue to keep the acreage that it has, and soybeans lagging behind here, and could they be bidding up for those acres too?
Well, no, you know, it seems like the Keith Collins had a pretty good mindset this week when he talked about and referenced the issue that beans would probably be favored to the corn this next year because of inputs and just because of the flat price. And so beans are probably starting to get looked at now by Chicago, as many of our Illinois and Iowa clients have told us they're going to get looked at by them, that they're going to look really hard at planting 08 beans in a big amount in terms of acreage at the expense of corn. And so Chicago's probably picking up on that at this point. And I suspect, along with the currencies and with the way the meal has gone below its 200-day moving average for the first time since the life of contract, at least that's what we show on our charts, that those three things are pretty much what got the beans down here this week and why they closed so poorly.
Okay, anything else we need to add before I let you go for the day?
Other than that, we're just going to have to watch the November beans. We do have some, we need to hold that 100-day moving average in November, 825. That's also the June 22nd low. Those are probably some areas where there's a lot of sell stops, Todd.
All right, we appreciate it much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too, and that is Mike Zuzula with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon. Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. His name, of course, Steve Hilberg. AM580's own Mike Zola says the forecast for tonight looks like this. In the south, cloudy skies, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms elsewhere. Saturday in the south, partly sunny, a few showers. Those will happen early in the day, elsewhere partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range from around 75 near Lake Michigan to 88 in the far south. Dave Dickey is here now to take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, early this afternoon, House lawmakers passed its version of Farm Bill 2007 by a 231 to 191 vote. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says there's something in the bill for everyone to like and, conversely, something for everyone to dislike, but adds, quote, it's a step in the right direction. The bill leaves in place and in some cases increases subsidies to producers of major crops like corn and soybeans. It also devotes more money to conservation, renewable energy, nutrition, and specialty crop programs than the 2002 Farm Bill. But some Democrats say it did not go far enough. In the final hours leading up to the vote, House debate became increasingly partisan. House Republicans, who previously supported the legislation, ultimately rejected the measure because of a tax on certain foreign-owned companies with U.S. subsidiaries. House Ag Committee Ranking Member Bob Goodlatte.
This rule turns that bipartisan process on its head. It has poisoned the well in terms of bringing this to fruition. It has made this farm bill, no matter its fate here today, unlikely to have any future beyond this House of Representatives.
An attempt to remit the bill back to the House Agriculture Committee to reconsider the tax failed this morning, largely along party lines, 223 to 198 after contentious debate. The taxes, roughly $3 billion a year, are earmarked for food stamps and other nutrition programs. In all, the five-year bill contains about $42 billion in subsidies to producers. Critics say they will renew their efforts for reform when the Senate Agriculture Committee marks up its version of the Farm Bill in mid-September. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency is linking Canada's 10th case of mad cow disease to contaminated feed. The CFIA says the 66-month-old dairy cow likely contracted BSE in the first year of its life. The CFIA says procedures at the feed manufacturing facility to prevent cross-contamination of ruminant feeds with prohibited materials existed, but were not followed. The International Grains Council has raised its forecast of global grain stocks by 2 million metric tons to 1.658 billion tons. The IGC says the increase this month was largely due to higher projections in global corn output. The U.S. corn crop forecast was raised this month by 5 million metric tons to 320 million metric tons, and China's output was increased by 2 million to 145 million. WTO Director General Pascal Lamy says world trade negotiators need to closely study the draft proposal that was last week circulated by Ag Chair Crawford Faulkner and be prepared to discuss tariffs and subsidies in good faith at a September meeting.
The negotiation is up to you, the participants. And the virtue of these texts is that they allow you to negotiate at a more concrete, a more intense, and a more specific level. Draft modality papers are only another step in the process. They identify possible areas of convergence and areas where gaps still need to be bridged. Delegation now have the month of August to reflect fully on the draft text and then be in a position to return to the process prepared to engage in an intensive negotiation as from September 3rd.
Lamy says behind the scenes, maneuvering has intensified in recent months and a Doha round deal is still possible. In South Korea's Yonhap News reports, an anonymous agriculture ministry official says the country will make a decision about imports of bone-in beef from the U.S. this month. According to the official, a livestock quarantine consultation committee is meeting this week to review information from inspectors of U.S. plants. From there, the committee will make a formal recommendation. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. This week, an amendment to the 2007 House of Representatives version of the Farm Bill introduced by Ron Kind of Wisconsin was defeated. It would have eliminated farm subsidies to producers making more than $250,000 a year and the direct payments and relied more heavily on revenue assurance programs. I talked with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois about the Kind Amendment and its defeat. He says he was disappointed.
Ron Kind spent a lot of time putting together what I think was a reasonable alternative to the traditional farm bill. That farm bill and its approach has been changed over the years from the time that Franklin Roosevelt said it's time for the federal government to step up and make sure the farmers can survive from year to year. It got very complicated and convoluted as we tried to come up with ways to help farmers through price. And, of course, price doesn't always tell the story. And this program, this farm program, I think is in need of real reform.
And you have put forth some reform in the terms of revenue assurance. How different is it than what farmers are used to with the crop insurance, federal crop insurance programs that they signed up for instance, this past spring?
I think it's more reasonable, and I think it's more easily understood. You know, when you look back on loans and price supports and target prices and all the things that we've done over the years, you really had to be not just a farmer but a pretty skillful accountant to figure out how to make this work so that you could survive with a federal program. Well, what I've done with Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio is to come up with a much more straightforward approach. We really take a look at a farm operation on a state basis and say, you know, what is the reasonable revenue expectation of that farming operation? We say to the farmer, you've got to buy some crop insurance to cover yourself, but the federal government will step in if something really unexpected occurs. If the bottom drops out in terms of price, if you run into a drought or a flood, we'll be there so that we don't have these lurches from 2 years to 3 years with big disaster bills to try to make up the difference, but rather build into the farm program an approach that will help the farmers through a difficult year. The bottom line is we want a farmer to be able to survive. One bad year shouldn't put you out of business.
At what level of protection are we discussing? And I guess I read a 90% figure in your press release,
right,
but I wasn't sure that that was the right figure.
That is. And really, we understand that, you know, there is a margin of profit and a margin of disappointment here when it comes to farming. But we try to keep what we consider to be a reasonable revenue stream protected, and that's 90% of the anticipated revenue. I think that's a more sensible approach. Unfortunately, that was offered in the House and rejected pretty soundly. And the reason, of course, is that there are many crops, cotton and rice come to mind immediately, that receive substantial and massive federal subsidies. And for a handful of producers, we really put a lot of money on the table. Well, they managed to rally their forces and to provide a farm bill that had a lot of very attractive elements to it, and they overcame the revenue approach in the House. Now we're going to bring the debate up in the Senate this fall.
The 90% would be figured like the current crop insurance, so it would be the month of February for corn.
That's based on you know, the state averages and expectation based on history and a farming operation. So we try to make it as real as possible and zero in you know, on each state to figure out what the revenue goals are going to be. You know, if you take a look at crop insurance, it's been a hit and miss operation in the past, and I think what we need to do is to integrate crop insurance into every farming operation. A farmer, just as a person owning a home or an automobile, needs to take personal responsibility to protect themselves in bad times. They shouldn't anticipate that there's going to be a disaster bill that's going to rush to their rescue. And so we try to build this whole approach of revenue protection on crop insurance as well.
All right, and then tell me how the private insurers will be put into the mix.
Well, what we're doing is to make sure that there's a level of insurance and protection on each farming operation, and so that they really have covered their own risk with this crop insurance investment. And I think that's a reasonable thing to do. But we understand that that crop insurance is never going to quite cover it all. And many farmers say, you know, even if the crop insurance pays off in a bad year, I may not be able to survive to next year. So that's where this program, this revenue program, steps in. Takes a look at the difference between expected revenue, crop insurance payoffs, and makes up that difference to 90%.
So no countercyclical payments, no loan deficiency payments, just the revenue assurance.
That's right.
And
the interesting thing I might add is that it has support of national corn growers. This is a big operation, as you might imagine, in Iowa and Illinois and the Midwest. And it's a crop that historically has relied on federal programs. Now, the good news is that corn prices are up with ethanol expansion and production. There's more and more demand and likely more to follow. And so what we're trying to do is be reasonable, not to step in line and say, well, we still want a federal payment. Nope, the corn growers have said, this is a good time, and we're willing to take that into consideration. And so we shouldn't base everything on price.
And then where do you stand on payment limitations? I know this wasn't taken up here.
I support payment limitations. You know, some of the embarrassing things that have come out recently in the news are reminders that we need to tighten up this program. You can't expect taxpayers living in urban areas to look the other way when we have reports that farm payments are being made to people who are long ago deceased and long ago out of farming. They expect the farm programs to be there for family farmers, local farmers, and people who are trying to make a living in a vulnerable occupation. But when it becomes a kind of a backstop for big investment, then I think people are rightly critical. So I'm in favor of payment limitations, and the numbers that we received from the administration was $200,000 in annual farm income. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa and I have had a proposal in the past to make it $250,000. I think those are reasonable numbers.
And finally, Senator, I know the House is debating Farm Bill this week. Senate will take it up in September?
I assume that by early September, as we return from the break, Tom Harkin of Iowa will be reporting the bill from the Senate Agriculture Committee. And then I think that in the month of September or early October, we'll start our debate. I want to make sure this is done and done on a quick basis because there's a lot of uncertainty there. I don't like the idea of Congress sputtering, failing, and then renewing the old farm bill. That's thrown in the towel as far as I'm concerned.
That was the senior senator from Illinois, Dick Durbin. By the way, unlike the Kind Amendment, which the House defeated this week, the Durbin-Brown Amendment to the Senate version of the Farm Bill would not eliminate direct payments to producers. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report, and we're joined to take a look at the cash grain market now by Bruce Bostert. He's the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company General Manager. They have 7 East Central Illinois locations. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Basis this week has managed to follow along fairly closely, or did it widen out again?
The basis hung in better this week. I think we've had enough of a back off early. Things have hit lower levels. Cash movement has come to a screeching halt. Maybe on some of the nearby numbers, CIF has even climbed back a little bit on corn. Beans, boy, CIF is so far under, it really doesn't hardly even matter. We're looking at delivered New Orleans barge values at 5 under the August. So that it's way out of there for, you know, versus delivery or anything else.
And then how about for river basis?
River basis numbers, we've seen freight take a little bit of a step back. Seems like some of the stuff is opening up a little bit for some mid-miss barges. I mean, it's still at relatively high levels. We're getting real close to the point where we're going to need a few barges down south of Memphis to put some new crop corn into.
And processors in need of either corn or soybeans at this time?
They sure don't act like it. Yeah, Decatur corn, well, Decatur corn is basically unchanged. Beans came back a few cents, but still at a 50 under level. That doesn't sound like anybody is very, very hungry. Corn side, SIF was up a couple cents yesterday on corn, down 3 on beans, so not a whole heck of a lot of change.
And I bet you're thinking they're not going to get hungry before harvest, or will they?
No, I don't think so. We've got that transitional area with a big carryout this August and a much smaller one next August, and there's enough beans out there to pound on anything. And if they did pop their head up, I think I could find a few hedge beans to sell them that I should have got off earlier.
And your bids for the day?
Actually, I have been in a meeting all afternoon, and I don't have them ready yet. I dropped that on somebody else today.
All right, don't worry about it. Thanks much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He is the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us on Friday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market in 2 minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Firefighters say it could be early this evening before they give the all-clear to residents in a portion of Urbana's Washington Street to go back to their homes. A gas leak that erupted this morning in the midst of a contractor's project forced an evacuation of about 30 people. Fire crews say the 6-inch main was hit as workers were installing fiber optic lines. Washington remains closed between Race and Anderson. Illinois legislative leaders are trying a new tactic for resolving the state budget deadlock, leaving the governor out of it. The four leaders met yesterday without Governor Rob Blagojevich. Senate President Emil Jones says the governor's views aren't being ignored, since he and Blagojevich share many budget priorities. But in an interview with WLS Radio today, Jones says it's up to the legislative leaders to make the decisions. House Speaker Michael Madigan told the station the leaders are trying to negotiate a budget for the full year, but Madigan says he's open to a temporary budget if that doesn't work. Illinois is operating on a temporary budget now, but it expires next Tuesday. Without a new spending plan, state government might shut down some services in August. Blagojevich wants lawmakers to approve another one-month budget this weekend. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says he sees a real chance for Democrats to win the seat now held by GOP Congressman Ray LaHood. LaHood has easily won re-election since 1994, even to the point of having no opponent. He formally announced his retirement today, effective in 2009. Some Republicans laugh at the suggestion that a Democrat could win LaHood's seat, citing how the area has repeatedly elected Republicans for 75 years. But Durbin says a possible Democratic nominee might be State Senator John Sullivan, who has a strong base in conservative rural areas the GOP considers its own. Durbin also cites Peoria County State's Attorney Kevin Lyons as somebody with a reputation who might be the kind of candidate who could win. The University of Illinois' Global Campus Initiative may go one step further to reality next week with two Board of Trustees votes. Trustees are scheduled to funnel nearly $6.5 million into the extensive online learning program and set tuition rates for the first 4 degree and certificate programs set to begin in January. The board meets Monday in Chicago. And a voting machine company must pay $350,000 to the state of Indiana for 198 violations of election laws. Indianapolis-based Microvote General provided voting equipment to 47 counties. It came under investigation after allegations its machines weren't certified by the state. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. On a Friday afternoon, time to take a look at what's been happening in the weather situation across the Midwest. Steve Hilberg is with us from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Yeah, a little bit of rainfall here in Champaign-Urbana. More on the way.
Yeah, it looks like it. There is a cold front draped across northern Illinois into Iowa and up into the Great Lakes. And as that comes through later today, we could see more showers and thunderstorms being kicked off with the front as it comes through. There's a few starting to pop up now up in northern Illinois. So I don't think we're done with the rain yet, but it looks like we'll have another good shot at it before the day is out.
Fairly widespread across the Midwest or not?
Across the Midwest, no. Illinois, faring a little bit better. The rainfall this month has really been a patchwork around the Midwest, and I can't remember ever seeing it quite this odd as it might be, with all the rain in the central Midwest and basically the periphery not getting much at all. For July, we've had a lot of rain from the eastern half of Iowa through northern Illinois and maybe into southern Michigan and southern Wisconsin. And then you look back into Missouri, western Iowa, Minnesota, much of Ohio and southern Indiana, and things are very dry. And it's just a sort of very odd situation. So I think, in general, I would have to say that July has been a rather dry month across the Midwest.
Earlier expectations in the week that we'd return to sunny skies, drier weather, but not so hot, just about like we had earlier this week.
Next week. It really doesn't look like the heat's going to really get in here. I didn't think so 2 weeks ago, and we didn't get it last week. Didn't look like it. The models have been trying to off and on, but right now it looks like next week will be pretty close to normal, maybe starting out the week slightly below normal with temperatures, because we'll get this front through, and so we'll start off this weekend with some nice, cooler, dry air that'll probably last us into Monday or Tuesday. But then we should get into some southerly flow, and that'll bring back the heat and humidity, and we could be seeing temperatures maybe getting near 90 by the end of the week, but I don't see any strong indications for that. And probably that'll be our next chance of rain, would be the end of next week, too.
And very quickly, yield predictions from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Well, for Illinois, we're up about 2 bushels an acre this week over last week. Region-wide, it's pretty level because we've seen increases in some areas and decreases in others. But for Illinois, it looks pretty good right now with about 100 and median value of about 165 bushels an acre.
Thanks much.
Okay.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. I'm Todd Gleason. That's the closing market report for Friday afternoon. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. If you can't wait, pick it up off the website at WillAg. That's WILLAG.org. Have a great afternoon.